I'm Rachel Johnson, co-host of the EduGals podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and this is where I help educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. Because my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can have a tremendous impact on your organization. I chat with inspiring guests who are truly making an impact as instructional leaders. Whether this is your first time listening or you've come back for more, I hope you've subscribed to this show on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss any of the great episodes, topics, or guests. Anyway, I'm so glad you've tuned in. Now let's get started. Hey, Leader of Learning, welcome into episode 140. If you tuned in to episode 139, then you realize that I put in some interesting interviews that I conducted with some edtech companies about what's going on with their products and their organizations when I attended the ISTE conference back in June. I'm going to do the same thing here in episode 140 because I really want to highlight these organizations who I think have amazing products and some really great momentum going for them. In the last episode, I featured two companies. In this one, I'm going to feature three. Coming up will be interviews that I conducted with School Status, Construct 3, and Identity Automation. In this interview with School Status, I spoke to Leslie Ortego, who's the Director of Customer Success at School Status. We discussed how their product can really serve to keep open the lines of communication among all stakeholders in education, which really could truly impact teachers, administrators, parents, and of course students, bringing everyone together on the same page to support student growth and achievement in school. Here's my interview with Leslie. Welcome back to ISTE Live 22 coverage. I'm here at School Status with Leslie, and this is a tool that I'm very interested in. It's really all about communication and communicating with all stakeholders in schools and in education in general. So welcome to ISTE, I guess. I hope it's going well so far. And tell us a little bit more about School Status.
Yeah, so thanks, Dan. School Status is a K-12 software that is designed to pull data in from multiple different sources. So we're talking student information system, benchmarks, state assessments, giving educators a complete picture of their students. From there, call, text, email, and video chat with parents. We remove barriers to communication like requiring an app to download, needing parents to opt in, or you know, parents are inundated with information from various sources, and it's hard to know where to go to communicate just with their teacher if they don't speak English. If they work two jobs and it's hard to find ways to and time to communicate with parents, we're about removing those barriers. With our tool, there's no app to download. You're going to send a good old-fashioned phone call, text message, and email to really build relationships with parents. And some of those, the unengaged parents that we might not have been able to engage otherwise.
Can you explain that a little bit more? You just said there's no app to download. So how would the communication work then?
Yeah, so teachers and principals, anyone that has a School Status account, can log in, and then it is scoped according to their access. So teachers have access to their courses, so we sync with their student information system. We know who your students are. Principals and assistant principals will have a whole school. District has the whole district. And from there, you can go to the student record, hit the call button. Your computer becomes a speakerphone. Or you can use the cell phone option where your cell phone is kind of the conduit in between. Or you can use our app, phone call, text message, and email, but we're masking the educator's phone number in the process, so their personal phone number is not given out to the parent when they communicate. It's a two-way, so the parent can respond back, and it goes straight to that teacher. It's all logged and recorded on the student card.
Where does the intersection happen between gathering the data on students and integrating with the SIS, the information system, and School Status?
Yeah, so when we first started with school status, there was a need to get a complete picture of a student. And, you know, you've got your SIS and you've got the exports and the reports that come out of there. You've got your benchmark assessments, you've got your state assessments. It's hard to get a complete picture of student data without logging into three or four places. So that was the first need that we saw. So we built the integration of, we're going to pull the data out of the SIS and we're just going to marry that up with all the other data so that educators can see a complete picture of a student. And we thought, okay, that's great. That's cool. Data's cool. Data-driven decisions is a very buzzy term, or it has been for a while. And, you know, we saw that there was no action from the data. What are we doing with data? What is the point of all of this gathering of data? And for us, it was building the bridge from home and school. So communicating seamlessly with parents, giving teachers these tools to communicate in a one-to-one capacity, in a group capacity, and district level for the whole school or district capacity, and make parents feel as stakeholders, as part of the community, building a community of inclusion and, you know, building relationships with parents, really just for student success.
As a parent myself, I know how different but important it was during the pandemic, even the unfortunate circumstances that we were in with where everyone was learning and working from home. But on a positive note, I told people it gave me a better glimpse into who my own kids were as students. Sometimes parents don't necessarily see that unless there is clear communication and that two-way communication, like you said, between the school and home. Can you give us just like an example and some anecdotal evidence maybe about how school status works in that regard, where you're really allowing the schools and districts to communicate like to parents how their kids are learning and how they're succeeding in school?
Absolutely. One of our most used features is our picture messaging tool. So with our text messaging feature, you can attach a picture. So, you know, who doesn't want a picture of their child doing amazing things in the classroom? So that's a way that teachers often talk about how amazing it is to use school status to bring parents in, because like you said, when you drop your kid off at school, you don't really know, you know, they act one way at home, but are they acting that same way in the classroom? And to be able to feel, and my district uses school status, so I get the added benefit of being a parent that receives those text messages and knowing that I have a direct connection to my kid's teacher, it's a relief for me. If I need something, I know where to find them. I mean, I even have anecdotal stories of my own. My daughter cracked her head open, so it was kind of like sewn up, and it looked kind of gnarly for a minute. And she was real self-conscious about it, so we put a bandana on it. She didn't want to go to school. I text the teacher, school status. I said, hey, she's really self-conscious about this. Can you just please help ease her mind about it? She says, absolutely. By the end of the day, my teacher's sending me pictures of my kid, the bandana off, living her life, just loving, you know, being who she was. And it was just such a relief for me to know that I could one-to-one reach out to my teacher in that capacity, and I didn't have to send a note with her. I didn't have to worry about her. I knew that she was in good hands because the teacher was communicating with me.
So as parents, we're happy because it opens the lines of communication better between what we're doing with our own biological kids and what our teachers are doing with their kids, right? Does it add to the teacher's plate? How do the teachers feel about using it? Because I would imagine that it might be a little bit extra, but also at the same time, bringing parents really truly in as partners in that process of educating their kids. Just, you know, what do the teachers feel about it?
Yeah, so it's funny because a lot of times administrators think that it will be a burden to their teachers. And in fact, it can be a barrier to, you know, adding on a tool like this. Like, oh, my teachers are already inundated with software. We cannot put another login on them. And we get that. We totally get that. There's certainly information overload at times, or just app overload, initiative overload. But what we hear directly from our teachers is it saves them time. It actually makes their life more efficient, because it's a one-stop shop. And I didn't come up with that term. We didn't come up with that term. Our users came up with that term. They say it over and over. School status is a one-stop shop. I log in one place. I get a complete picture of my student. I can communicate with their parents. It's logged and recorded. They rave about the documentation. that it's just natural to school status. They don't have to keep a call log or a text log or anything like that. So, you know, I would say you have to try it to understand just how much of a burden it lifts from teachers.
That's fair. And I also was thinking one-stop shop, right? We're talking about pulling in all the student information and data and allowing everybody, educators, parents, to really open those lines of communication. For anyone watching or listening, if they want more information, they're interested in school status, even just learning more about it, where do they go? Who do they contact?
Yeah. So visit our website, www.schoolstatus.com. Or email answers@schoolstatus.com, and somebody will get you the necessary information you need.
Leslie, thank you so much. This has been School Status from ISTE Live 22. Thanks a lot. Next up, in my interview with Construct 3, I interviewed Thomas Gullen, co-founder of Construct 3. Developed in 2011 by him and his brother Ashley, Construct 3 is a state-of-the-art game engine that easily and effectively allows anyone to develop their own games without needing to know how to code. Construct 3 is the third and latest and most robust iteration of the innovative software known as PowerPoint for Games that has quickly been embraced by teachers and schools across the U.S. Here's my interview with Tom Gullen. All right, we're back with our ISTE Live 22 coverage. I'm here with Tom from Construct 3. It's great to meet you. How's the conference going?
It's going really well. It's great meeting lots of people from all over America, and we're absolutely loving our time in New Orleans at the moment.
I am too. I actually haven't been here in like 30 years. It's crazy. But tell us a little bit about what Construct 3 is, how it's helping the field of education.
Yeah, sure. So Construct 3 is a game engine that runs in the browser, which is our main selling point. So it'll run on Chromebooks, it'll run on Android devices, anything the students have, it will run on. And it lets students build games using blocks. So instead of syntactical programming, big, long, boring lines of code, it's block-based, and it's a much easier way to learn how to program. And on top of that, we also have a hybrid solution where you can actually add your first lines of JavaScript into the blocks themselves and transition all the way to writing full JavaScript code. So it's a great transition from students who are on Scratch and want to do something more and learn how to program in a sort of engaging environment where they're making games.
I guess my first follow-up question would be, having said that, I could see how this could be essentially for all ages, or is there a certain age range that you're targeting?
So Key Stage 5 is our sweet spot for education. But I've had emails from parents who are using it with their five-year-old children, and the five-year-old children will like make art, and they'll scan it in and add it into a game. So it's a really nice thing to do with your child. But we also go all the way up to professional industry. We have professional game studios who exclusively use Construct 3 to make games and distribute them. And we've also sold to NASA, which is great. And we hope they're not launching rockets with it. We don't think they are. But we've also sold to big game studios like Zynga and King. So we go from really young age, but the tool's very powerful and flexible, and it goes all the way up to professional industry.
You mentioned that basically this is on, it could be done on any device. I'm assuming it's web-based. How does that work?
Yeah, so it's all run, so you just visit a web page and use it. So although it runs in the browser, it functions much like traditional software, so it'll still work offline. And we get lots of users emailing us saying they forget they're in the browser when they're actually using it because it feels so much like traditional software. So it's very easy to pick up and use. It's not like bad web software.
And what's the website?
The website is construct.net. And from there, there's a link to have a free go at Construct 3 and lots of demos and examples.
One of the themes, and maybe this is just because I scheduled my interviews really well, but one of the themes I'm picking up on some of the interviews that I've done and some of these ed tech companies seems to be that they're trying to be a one-stop shop. When you're explaining what Construct 3 is to me and to the viewers and listeners, it seems kind of like a one-stop shop because it takes some coding skills with gaming and it becomes something that students can create and play, but you have those STEM related coding skills with, you know, some math and am I getting that right?
Yeah, so I don't think we'd say we're one stop shop because we're not teachers. So we don't create course, we have very limited course materials on our website to download, but we have a partnership with a company called STEMFuse who are attending here on this booth today with us. And they actually build a lot of coursework and a lot of syllabus using Construct 3 as a tool around it. So between us and STEMFuse, we have everything covered.
That's great. Teachers want to learn more. Where do they go? Who do they talk to? What do they do?
Well, if you're at the conference, come and say hello to us, of course. But if you visit our website, conshut.net, we have lots of contact information. It'll be me or some other member of the team answering the emails. So feel free to drop us an email. Look on our website. We've got hundreds and thousands of tutorials and free downloads and to get you going.
One last question. You mentioned in terms of kind of the sweet spot, I think you said, in terms of the age range. How about, is this a tool that teachers can use with every student in their class? They want to target only certain students. How is this, ideally, how is it being used, or how are you seeing it being used?
Yeah, so the sweet spot is key stage 5. That's where we find that after Scratch, a lot of students will be using Scratch and want to do something else. So it's like a natural progression on from that. So that's the natural sweet spot for us. But it is suitable for all ranges.
Tom, thank you so much. It's great to meet you. Construct 3, Tom, go check it out. Coding, gaming, everything involved. Have your students have some fun with Construct 3. And finally, in this interview with Identity Automation, I interviewed Diana and my good friend Jamie Donnelly from Identity Automation. We discussed the latest news in protections against ransomware and other aspects of student privacy and security. Keeping students secure without hampering instructional time has been imperative for educators. However, districts often find it difficult to get employees on board with protecting institutions due to the complexities of identity management and costs and lots of other things. That's where Identity Automation comes in. Here's my interview with Diana and Jamie. Welcome back to ISTE Live 22. I'm here at Identity Automation. I have Diana and my good friend Jamie Donnelly, and we're here to talk about what's going on with Identity Automation. So I guess I'll start with Diana. What's going on with Identity Automation? Explain it.
Well, I am one of the pathfinders for Identity Automation, and what we are is a group of educators who have worked in the field. I'm actually a retired educator, and we give advice to the company on how to I'm sorry. My Kentucky peeps.
Hey, Kentucky peeps, how are you?
Diana McGee's awesome.
This is what happens at ISTE Live. We haven't had an ISTE Live in 3 years. It just happens. It's okay. I'm not even going to edit that out. So pathfinders and
right.
Something.
Pathfinders, yeah. And we help promote the different benefits of a product like Identity Automation and how it impacts everyday usage. And one of the big components, which Jamie, I'm sure, will be able to talk about, is digital identity and security. And that's one thing that Identity Automation does really well.
Well, let's turn it over to Jamie then. Jamie, are you a Pathfinder?
No, I manage the Pathfinders.
Even better. So picking up from where Diana left off, then explain what she was talking about with identity and security.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because people are like, hey, don't you talk all about AR, VR? And I'm like, yeah, but this is actually a foundation that we have to have for the metaverse looking forward. When we talk about blockchain, we talk about our digital identities essentially following us everywhere we go, everything we do. We manage digital identities. So when you're talking about having an ecosystem like we have in schools where we have 5 billion applications all in different grade levels and different subjects and different campuses, now we actually have a way to manage all of that in one central place, right away, immediate, exactly when they need it, and it ends exactly when they're not supposed to have it, at the level that they're supposed to have it. So they're getting a personalized experience on the digital side to be able to get exactly what they need in the learning spaces without having to wait around for somebody to create accounts or stop accounts or all of the above, really.
Can I ask you maybe a little bit of a naive question, but just assuming that someone else has the same question, is digital identity and digital footprint kind of the same thing?
A little bit. It's okay. Similar, but it's really like who you are holistically. So it's all of your activity, which would be your digital footprint, but it's also your persona that you have. And if I go to Facebook, what I'm doing there and my activity there and who I'm known for, what my exactly who I present myself to be is very different than how I present myself to be on Twitter or how I present myself to be on LinkedIn, right? I have these different personas in these different spaces. Digital identity is ultimately who I am holistically, what access I need, so my individual needs, and what my interests are,
What are things that I need to be able to move forward in whatever it is, life, school, it could be your digital identity, even financially. So all of those things in your digital identity is essentially being tracked and managed, in our case managed, but ultimately our digital identity being tracked in one place. Whereas right now, Chase tracks one thing from my bank, which I probably shouldn't have said that.
Just don't give your account number, it's all right.
And then, you know, you may also have identity automation looks at me in a different way, but all of those things are not connected. Digital identity does connect. My digital identity will remain the same in everywhere I go, and all of those things. Ultimately, as we're looking at metaverse and blockchain, that's where we're heading to.
It's starting to make some more sense to me. I hope it does for the viewers and listeners as well. When Jamie explains all that to me, what I'm hearing is this is like next level security. And that's my way of boiling it all down. Did I get that right?
You did. And as a former educator who was a tech director at the end of my career, I can tell you that the teachers and the students, they don't really care about any of that. All they want is ease of use, a way for it to work when it's supposed to work, and rapid, which is the product that we have with Rapid Identity, they want it to work quickly. So if I get a new student on, a family comes in on Monday morning to enroll, when that student comes to my class fifth period, that student would have credentials, would have access to the apps that I need him or her to have access to. And that's what it's all about, is the end user experience. And this product makes that end user experience a lot more pleasant.
Diane and Jamie, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for everything you're doing to help protect our educators and our students. And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
You have it. Those were my interviews with School Status, Construct 3, and Identity Automation, all from the ISTE Live 22 conference in New Orleans back at the end of June. You know, I talk all the time about how this show and I really try to help educators become better instructional leaders and grow their impact as instructional leaders. And although I say that I try not to focus too much on ed tech here on this show, in reality, I do feel that as instructional leaders, now maybe more than ever, we need to really be in the know on which types of educational technologies are best for our students, our schools, and our communities, and which ones are really going to provide the most impact, the best bang for your buck in terms of really supporting and improving student achievement. I think some of these organizations that I got to meet for the first time in many cases at the ISTE conference are doing some really great things. I'm happy to shed some light on what's going on in their organizations and help provide you, my listener, with more information about them so you can make better instructional leadership decisions about what might work for your school and your students. We're getting to be about at the midpoint here in August. So if you're already back at school, I want to wish you a great start to the year and a very successful 22-23 school year. And if not, just like me, please enjoy the last couple of weeks that you have left of your summer. Rest and relax and recharge to get ready for this next school year. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcast app. If you enjoy the content covered on this show, I want to ask you to do this one thing for me. Please share it. The biggest favor you could ever do for me is to please let others know about what I am doing and how I am helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. I hope you can share this podcast with other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. If you're interested in leaving a positive rating and review of this show, links to do so are always in the show notes for every episode. For more information about me or this show, and to access the great content that I share, please visit my website at leaderoflearning.com. That's where you can find my online courses, YouTube channel, blog, how to connect with me on social media, and even ways that you can support the show, like donating or purchasing Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, No matter who you are or where you are a leader of learning.